Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 283 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Daniel Kramer. Daniel is a very successful head of a law firm out in Los Angeles area that focuses exclusively on personal injury and catastrophic death cases. Really, as a well-known trial lawyer, they pretty much identify themselves as exclusive trial litigation practitioners. And Daniel started the practice, transitioned from a previous practice, and started this new exclusive personal injury practice during COVID. And so we're going to talk about what, if anything, he had to do differently as a result of COVID and how things have changed to the degree that they have. And will we be going back, you know, to the old ways in some cases, or is this the new normal? So as with other things, I hope you learn as much from this, listening to this interview as I did from conducting it. So without any further delay, here is Daniel Kramer. Daniel Kramer, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Neil. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you with us today, Daniel. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm a trial lawyer. I am in court all the time. Just actually finished a two-week jury trial last week, and I live and breathe in the courtroom. I started my firm, Kramer Trial Lawyers, APC, here in Los Angeles during COVID, actually, in the height of COVID. I had started a firm before in September 2012 with two partners that did totally different stuff. One did transactional entertainment. The other one did business litigation. And I am a personal injury employment plaintiff-only trial lawyer. So we had a diverse practice. I, you know, realized that I think it's best if I just have a trial lawyer only firm that only helps out injured individuals or people who are fired from their jobs. And so launched our trial lawyer firm in COVID, and it's been great ever since.
Well, that's a particularly daunting challenge. You know, I know a lot of law firms struggled, my own included, with the start of the pandemic. And now, damn it, seems like we're re-entering that phase, sadly, but pardon my French. but, it, you know, it's a real challenge to try and start something new during COVID. What were some of the you know, obstacles you had to overcome?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest was, so I had planned on, and again, I'm still close friends with my partners. It wasn't a bad breakup. It just kind of made sense from a business perspective all around, because our practices were just too divergent. And we had planned on doing this right before COVID. Obviously, COVID hits. We're not going to get then send out a bunch of marketing emails, send out to all of our contacts, you know, 10,000 plus. Oh, look at us. We just started a law firm. We're all excited when everyone, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. So
obviously, we received all that well.
No one wants to see a personal injury lawyer bragging about themselves at any time, really, but especially in the height of COVID. So we did, you know, we made the conscious decision to wait. And it, you know, in a way it helped get our, you know, foundation a little more solid. I mean, even though, you know, I'd been running the firm, I just kind of took my set of the practice and then just transitioned it out, stayed in the same office, same team and all that. So it wasn't a full brand new from scratch kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, developed a website, got all the marketing materials together. And then, you know, towards the you know, middle, second half of 2020, decided it was an okay time to do it. And we launched, and, you know, it's been great ever since. It really has helped really focus in on referral sources, bringing in clients, and just having that laser focus. All we do is we really try cases just for plaintiffs. Catastrophic injury, wrongful death, and right. employment matters.
Well, it really gave you kind of a long takeoff to kind of get this thing up and running. You had a real good base to start with. You had the, you know, people in place and facilities in place. So, I mean, there's some advantages there that, you know, folks that are starting straight out, you know, from law school or brand new from the kitchen table, so to speak, that they wouldn't have. But by the same token, it's just, you can't just change the nameplate on the door and expect business to continue to boom. So what were some of the things that you kind of took a hard look at it, trying to either improve or get in place in order to get this successful launch going?
Yeah, I mean, because I did have that unique experience where we did launch our firm with brand new from scratch. I was working in a big insurance defense firm in 2012. My partners were working at in-house firms and all that, or in-house attorneys. And so we had zero. We were all in debt.
So you've been through that startup process.
I've been through, oh yeah, big time. Not knowing how to fax, not having any staff for the first, you know, 8 months to a year, doing all my own books, learning in and outs of QuickBooks. So I've been there. I've done the whole from scratch thing for, you know, we had that firm for the predecessor firm for about 8 years. And then, you know, doing it again was, you know, how much I learned in 8 years on how to run a business. I mean, it really was super helpful. Like you said, having a long runway, having cases already, but you're right. I mean, you don't just change the name, then all of a sudden business dumps in. But we did kind of reinvent the way we do our marketing. Like I said, it was a lot more targeted. Before, we'd send out, you know, email newsletters where 1 month it would be entertainment business, and then the next month business litigation, and then the next month personal injury. And I think people are just kind of like, well, what, these guys are kind of jack of all trades kind of thing. Even though I specialized and we had had a lot of big verdicts on the personal injury side, and my other partners have done well, but now it was just really reinventing and being that targeted marketing. Like, we are just trial lawyers. You call us in when, if you're an attorney who has a case going to trial, maybe you don't have as much trial experience. Maybe you don't have the resources to go up against big corporations or big insurance companies. We can do that. So it was just being able to target like that made such a difference. And honestly, cases did start coming in right away just by doing that, because, you know, the amount of attorneys that actually try cases is getting fewer and fewer, sadly, because, you know, it's just harder to get cases to trial. It's really expensive. And so, you know, people need trial lawyers. And so, you know, we answer that call.
Let's talk about those dynamics a little bit, because, you know, personal injury is a little bit unique practice area with respect to others, in the sense that it's almost exclusively, if not exclusively, contingency based.
Right.
So if you're starting out as a solo or a young gun, you're working with, in the hopes that you can prevail at the end. And for a lot of people, if they don't have the resources to get them to that point, it's going to be very, very challenging. So you're right. I think more and more folks are looking to outsource the trial aspect of it because they just can't hold on that long.
Right. But I do want to be very clear. I mean, if you work hard and you truly care about your clients, you spend a lot of time with them, you are constantly learning. I mean, COVID has taught us that we can learn from sitting in our desks, sitting at home, watching webinars. I mean, there's been just a boom of plaintiff webinars that just teach us how to try a case, that you can do it. And, you know, don't just let some trial attorneys and, oh, you know, let me help you out and I'll just take your case. And just because I think it's important that whenever you partner up with a firm that tries cases, because you don't have experience. Look, I did it. I had a big wrongful death case right out of the gate. And I had done a bunch of defense work. I had tried cases on the defense side in my first 3 years, but I was given a pretty tragic wrongful death case. I didn't really know what to do with it. I brought in Brian Panish's firm, is a big plaintiff's trial attorney, one of the best in the country, and learned from them. And they gave me the ability to take depots, to argue motions, and not just take it from me and then just send me a check later on. I wanted to learn. So I think it's important for young attorneys who don't have the resources right out of the gate, partner up with a trial firm that is going to give you experience, let you sit in on depots. If you want, let you take depots, let you go to expert depositions, let you sit second chair at trial, because, you know, the goal is to always be growing, especially as a younger attorney or a newer attorney who's just starting out their own firm. You want to learn the inner workings of the way to best do it. So make sure when you're having a strategic partnership, not just someone who has won a ton of cases, you want to learn, you want to, you know, grow. I think that's the best way to do it.
I think it's really good advice too, because you don't want to make it a turnkey system. I'll take the case up till the point we determine it has to go to litigation. Then you take it from here, because as you said, you don't learn anything from that. You know, if you aspire to stay in the practice that involves litigation, and you at least need to get yourself exposed to it to find out, you know, if it's your cup of tea. May not be in the end, and so you may change how you approach working with a trial group, but you won't know until you get your feet in there.
100%. I mean, we work with firms of each side of the spectrum. We have some firms that really just do not want to litigate, and that's the way their business model is, and it works great for them. They are great at client acquisition. They have tons of contacts. They bring in a lot of cases. They'll try to work it up pre-litigation. If it doesn't settle, they'll say, look, this case needs to be litigated, and then they'll bring us in, and they'll just say, look, just send us the referral fee at the end of the case. We'll just check in, and we always just send them updates. And that's great. That's their business model. We have some that, you know, want to be sort of in the background, just dealing with the client, but sort of being a part of the litigation. And like I said, we have the other end of the spectrum where people want to be second chair and just want to learn everything and anything. And I think being flexible, from my perspective, being flexible with all arrangements is important, because we love litigating. We love trying cases. So whatever works for the referring attorney, we're happy to deal with.
Yeah. In the latter model, you're almost serving as a mentor. Not all of us. You are.
100%.
As a mentor. I've told the story before on the podcast that when I first opened my doors as a solo practitioner, I did personal injury. And the day my phones got turned on, one of our referral firms, who is of the type, they never wanted to go back to court. They'd done enough, and called me and said, hey, I got 18 cases that need tried. Would you like them? Yes, I would. Thank you very much. You made my Monday. So, you know, that kind of thing happens. So yeah. I want to circle back though and revisit this runway of yours as you kind of launched the new firm. Did you make any choices to change, other than, you know, really focusing your marketing? Did you change any of your systems? Did you change any of your technology?
Yeah, well,
did you use that opportunity to kind of learn more about the tools that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm big on systems. So yes, I make sure that every time we do something new or even tweak something, I'm always having the team write it down in a step-by-step manner, so that it's like a protocol. It's like a playbook for anything that comes up. You could have a deposition, a plaintiff's deposition. I'll have from when the notice comes in, and literally write out just as a list of exactly what should the procedure be, so anyone can pick it up. And they say, okay, well, once the deposition notice comes in, the paralegal calendars it. The legal assistant sends it to the client, and I just have step by step within a certain amount of time. So then I do that with literally everything that ever happens. And as new things happen, let's create a procedure for it. Because that way you can, if things don't, something's missed, you can say, okay, where was the break in the chain that caused it? Do we need to adjust our systems, adjust our procedures, change it so that it's easier to understand or easier to follow? Or maybe we're not using the best resources in one way and it's inefficient. So we're always adjusting. We always have them. They're living, breathing documents. But I think I put a lot more focus on that because I knew we were going to have to run much more efficiently, because I no longer had partners that did hourly work, to have that hourly income. So we were strictly contingency, and, you know, and that we wanted to get out there and get bigger and better cases. And that meant more work, but it also meant we're going to have to work more efficiently on the back end. So I'm a big procedures guy, and documenting everything.
Let me ask you, in terms of your policies and procedures manual, did you use a platform, a tool, or is it just straight word processing? And if you did, do you have a template? Or mechanically, logistically, how do you put those policies and procedures into place?
Sure. Yeah. Honestly, it was just kind of a word processing system, mm-hmm. just on a Word document. And we would all sit down and the team and just go through each one. And, you know, like I said, defense medical exam.
Right.
What happens when that comes in? What happens when we're 90 days out from trial? And so just every single thing that we possibly do in our practice just became a separate Word document. And some are short. I mean, some is mail coming in, for example, or a settlement comes in, and they could just be three steps, but they're their own separate document. So it's not just one long document. I want them to be short, bite-sized, easy for anyone to pick up, anyone coming in new, a law clerk, anyone to pick up and say, okay, I can follow this step-by-step, you know, and then make sure it gets done.
Well, it's the only way to ensure consistency in the product. And if you want to grow your firm, you have to have those systems in place that you tweak to maximize their efficiency, because efficiency means profitability.
100%.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. This episode is brought to you by Security Plus. Do you ever worry about ransomware, losing client data, or your employees getting phished? You know that 29% of law firms have suffered a data breach of some type or another? As a solo or small firm lawyer, getting hacked can make a crushing impact to the high integrity and reputation that you've spent a lifetime building. That's why I love Security Plus, and I'm excited to bring them on as a new sponsor. It's a turnkey cybersecurity solution built for solo and small firm lawyers like you, who often lack the clarity, time, and skills to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats. Security Plus protects your firm with 8 security solutions. And the best part is that it requires just 1 hour of your time to get everything up and running. So check out this new solution at securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. And that's securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. You can grab their security checklist as a freebie and lock in 10% discount for life. Again, that's securityplus.io/Neil. So no other changes? Did you change your practice management software, or do you use practice management software? You know, a lot of PIs do not.
Yeah. And we looked into it, and I talked to a lot of different ones, interviewed a bunch of different ones, and our system was actually working pretty well. I mean, I may still revisit it, but we have just a whole, we have a really good internal filing system that, you know, supported, backed up by Dropbox. We have access to it anywhere. And we have a lot of templates through that. Yep. We have discovery templates for every kind of case, you know, from construction incident, accident, car crash, you know, slip and fall, premises case, dog bite. So we have a really good internal system. And I just felt that reinventing the wheel at the moment was not the right time for us. And, you know, things were working well and they still are working well. I still may revisit it. And I'm always open to new technologies, always. And new ideas, but I just felt that at the time I didn't think it was really worth it.
Right. Because of COVID, you know, all of us had to become more adept at virtualizing the office and being able to do things remotely. How did that fit in with your previous iteration of your law firm and your transition through the COVID period? Had you always been somewhat virtual, or did you fully commit to remote work, or where are you on that spectrum?
Yeah, no, we were not virtual at all. We obviously had to transition into virtual. We found out about a thing called Zoom, which we all are very intimate with now. And it's honestly, I think it's been great. Most of my team's back in the office now, but I can work from anywhere. I was prepping for trial. I had to go to North Carolina for a family reunion, was up in my grandmother's this house. The internet wasn't that good, but I was able to do depositions, do court appearances. I mean, it's just great what you can do. And, you know, I have a toddler and another one on the way. And I just know that it's important that we spend family time, but now I feel okay about doing it because I can sit in the room and if I have to take a deposition, I do it. We do team meetings 3 times a week, all over Zoom now. Depositions over Zoom are definitely here to stay. Mediations, I don't know if I'll do an in-person one again. It's so much more efficient. I can just, you know, because so much of a mediation is the mediator comes and talks to you for 10 minutes, goes to the other side. Maybe there's two defendants, goes to them for an hour. During that time, I can do work on a lot of other stuff. It's great for my clients. They get to be in the comfort of their own home, especially if they're in a lot of pain or seriously injured. I'm loving it. I mean, I think it's great. We're saving so much time. And especially for younger, newer firms, the amount of money you're going to save on travel and the time you're going to save on having to go 2 hours round trip to a deposition, especially here in LA where you're sitting in traffic most of the time, it's a total win-win. We have committed to Zoom. I'm on Zoom meetings multiple times a day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see it going back. Just the economics of it are such that it doesn't make sense to go back. And frankly, the efficiency. I remember trying to figure out how to revise my retainer agreement to charge for travel time. You know, if I was attending a deposition or even, you know, a court hearing around the Beltway here in Washington, D.C., like L.A., it could be an hour and a half travel time or sometimes more. And so you can't just kind of hand that time over. If I'm doing I could do some work over the phone in the car, but I couldn't completely use that time as fully billable. And I struggled with how to do that and, you know, the expenses of travel and so on and so forth. And now that's just a thing of the past.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely. And especially with when you're a contingency practice, you know, time is obviously very important. You can't bill for your time. And so the more time you're saving, not having to travel, you can use it to bring in clients, talk to referral sources.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the effects that remote mediation has, the positive effects. That's pretty interesting because when I practiced in DC, mediation was mandatory. and you had to go to the mediation center, and it can be an all day affair. And a lot of it was sitting around waiting for the mediator to talk to the other side. As you said, this way, you know, with breakout rooms and sitting in your office and your client in the comfort of their own home, it's a lot more efficient, a lot more work can be done. And so you're right. I don't see things going backwards in that respect.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it is nice. I mean, I thought that we wouldn't need office space or anything like that, but it's so good to be in the office with my team. I mean, I think that these other aspects dealing with, you know, people not in my office, opposing counsel, all over Zoom is great. We have not, I don't think we've gonna plan on doing a hybrid, you know, 3 days a week at home, 2 days a week in the office yet. And no one's really asked for that. You know, we all work really well together in the office, and I think it's important we are together.
But you have that flexibility if that's something that you need to go back to, or you know, hopefully it's not, you know, mandated that we go back to that with the, you know, the pandemic starting to revisit us here. But at least you have that flexibility. And like you said, maybe some aspects of it, maybe your team meeting you do on 3 times a week on Zoom, your stand-up meeting you do it at Zoom, save some time that way. Or I don't know, there's some hybrid approaches that may be useful down the road.
Absolutely. No, totally. And even we actually do our team meetings, even though we're all in an office together over Zoom at our computers, because a lot of times it's
easier. even though you're down the hall, you're still going to use.
Yeah, we do because I find it to be a lot more efficient as well, because we run through the cases, you know, we do our litigation meetings on Mondays and Fridays, then pre-litigation on Wednesdays. And we sort of just run through the cases to touch base with every case. And it's so much easier for my team when there's a question just to quickly pop it up on our system. They have multiple screens, and I just think it just makes it running a lot quicker. We used to just do them in our conference room, and
then you got to schlep all your documentation in there with you. And if there's a question that comes up that you can't answer, you got to go back out to the office, pull the file. And so, yeah, I can see some efficiencies to be, you know, realized there.
Absolutely.
Even if you're in the same physical location, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
How about in terms of technology? Did you make any changes with the new firm, add any pieces of technology?
We didn't, no. The only thing we would have added, I mean, we use Clio, for example, for all of our calendaring, but we had been doing that for a while. We have not integrated a, you know, file management software besides our own internal system. Right. It's always something in the back of my mind, but again, I just think if it's not broke, don't fix it necessarily. And I don't know how much, you know, I think we're running things pretty efficient now with our internal built system. But yeah, I mean, there really wasn't much. I'm just trying to think. I mean, there really wasn't much big technology change.
Have you considered virtual assistants in any capacity to augment your staff?
Yeah. I mean, it's always something that we're considering, but we have not used anything like that yet.
Yeah.
Are you using that?
Well, again, I think, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But, you know, I know quite a few PI firms who have outsourced the medical record collection because it's just so burdensome at times. And so there are lots of companies that will do that, perform that function, and turn over, like I said, all the discovery or all the records in a digitized form. And it just takes a lot of workload off the staff.
Right. No, we are fully digital, 100%. Right. We just don't use
Okay. And then the other thing I see in terms of PI firms often is using a virtual assistants to do a medical analysis of those records.
So we do that. We outsource our medical records actually to a company in India, to their doctors out there who summarize, review. I mean, sometimes it's thousands and thousands of pages of documents, and as opposed to having someone in our office do it, we outsource it and they do a great job. It's medical doctors. They make it really bite-sized and easy to understand, which we found great. And we also do, you know, we use a depo summary company. When we have a lot of depos or that we have to come into a case, we outsource that to, they do great summaries of depositions, take a 300-page deposition, condense it into, you know, 20 pages. And that's really helpful when you're coming in last minute, gearing up for trial. Saves a lot of time.
Yeah, it does. And also, it does a really, if done properly, does a really good job of leveraging resources so that your associate attorneys or yourself included, you know, can spend your time effectively coming up with a legal strategy for how to address the case without having to spend hours and hours and hours personally going through the medical records and coming to those conclusions.
Right. 100%. No, we outsource a lot of that.
Interesting. Well, listen, Daniel, this has been pretty illuminating. Sounds like things are working well. You've had good fortune through the pandemic. I hope that continues. Are you seeing any kind of different cases as a result? I know for some personal injury attorneys during the pandemic with a reduction in travel, that there was a fall off in terms of the cases that were coming in. Have you seen anything in that regard?
There was definitely in the height, you know, the first few months of lockdown,
right.
There's a lot less calls. But I mean, the biggest thing for a trial lawyer is when courts are closed, you're kind of stuck out there. And then the defense industry, the insurance carriers, they love delay. They love pushing things out. So it was a good thing. But we just tried one of the first cases in the main courthouse in LA, the first jury trials in almost 20 months, just finished about a week ago, trying a case with mask on. It was a completely different beast, picking a jury with a mask on, witnesses with mask on. You know, it's a different beast, but it worked out great. I mean, the jury came back, gave us about $12 million. A lot of that pain and suffering damages. And, you know, it's just awesome that people are willing to come back and serve on juries because there's such a backlog. Our clients need to get their cases heard, get the wheels of justice moving again. And it's great to be back in there.
Yeah, that's a huge impact. You know, the closing of the court to the litigation process, not only for personal injury, but family and, you know, and civil, everything. I mean, the trials are just pushed out ridiculously far, and it's a strain on everybody. So good on you for at least getting back in there. Hard to read the facial expressions and the nuances of a jury with the mask on, but you know, seems like with that verdict you did a pretty good job anyway.
It worked. And honestly, when you're picking a jury, it kind of I didn't really talk about COVID, but you just talk about, you know, look, we all have masks on. So much of what we do as lawyers picking a jury is just reading the nonverbal communication. Right. So will you please just talk to us? And if you can get a jury talking in voir dire, that's half the battle right there, right? Because we want to find out how they feel about things. So it actually, and they all took it to heart. We had them talking a lot. I mean, it was one of the most talkative jurors I've had. And they were sharing their opinions, they were sharing their beliefs, because I think they understood that we can't read their mouths and we've all been dealing with this. So it's important we have them speak up, and they did.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, listen, Daniel, again, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you had to share with us.
Yeah. Thanks, Neil. It's been great talking to you. I'm Daniel Kramer with Kramer Trial Lawyers APC here in Los Angeles. Our website is www.kramerlaw.com, or you can email me at dkramer@kramerlaw.com. Yeah. Really appreciate it, Neil.
And I will say, love the website. I really like some of the visuals on your website.
You know, thank you.
How it flips to like on the Meet Our Team. And I encourage everybody to go there to see the some of the visual stuff that Daniel has on his website and how it works. I think that's very innovative, and I really like that.
Awesome. Thanks, Neil. I appreciate that.
All right, my friend. Take care. All
right. Take care.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur. Mm-hmm.